Talk Show.
Recorded live.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, aloha, Patricia, and good evening to everybody. Hello to you, the people in the UK, everybody listening. This is going to be part 16 of the Two Seed Line message. Last week, we left off somewhere around Genesis 27. I remember quoting, I actually went back to a previous chapter, quoting the scriptures about Rebekah, that Rebekah would be a mother of many nations as well. A lot of people never realized that. Abraham and Sarah and Rebekah and Isaac and Israel, to Jacob Israel, were all prophesied to be the parents of many nations. And that's not true of any other people, folks. It's certainly not true of Canaanites. It's not true of the Ishmaelites. It's not true of blacks, Orientals, or any other race or breed. It's only true of this seed line, folks. That's
and
the only people. Yes?
I'm sorry. And that promise cannot count the bastards.
Okay.
Because they are never accounted for as offspring.
Mm-hmm.
Judah and,
right.
You know, when we look at the later genealogies of the tribe of Judah, we never see Shelah mentioned. When we get to the New Testament,
mm-hmm.
Zara, even though Christ didn't descend from Zara, Zara's mentioned explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
Shelah's never mentioned.
Right, right. Yeah, well, because he was a bastard in the mongrel sense of the term.
Right, and that's, I just wanted to make that point, that
right.
That these guarantees assure them of Adamic, pure Adamic descendants.
Right, exactly. And the fact is that Matthew chapter 1 and Luke chapter 3, they stress the genealogy, and there's a reason for that, folks. It's not a subject to be ignored, as your mainstream churches will tell you. But here, let me go into Genesis 27, verse 46, because, folks, here is Rebekah again stressing a very important point. And Rebekah said to Isaac, I am weary of my life because of the daughters of Heth, that is, these Hittite women. If Jacob take a wife of these daughters of Heth, such as these which are of the daughters of the land, what good shall my life do me? So she definitely doesn't like these Canaanite women, and it's verified in chapter 28, verse 1, which is the very next verse. And Isaac called Jacob and blessed him and charged him and said to him, you shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan. Okay, and then the next couple of verses it tells us, go arise and go back to Padan Aram to find a woman there rather than a Canaanite woman. So isn't it obvious that these Canaanite women, we are not to make marriages with them?
Right, and here, even though it is not yet explicitly mentioned that Esau has taken Canaanite wives,
mm-hmm.
because they're really not mentioned until Genesis chapter 36.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean that it doesn't happen until Genesis chapter 36.
Right, right.
That Rebekah saying this here is an indication that Esau's already gone out and done this.
Yeah. Oh, well, actually, you got it wrong. It's Genesis 26, two chapters earlier, 26, 34, and 35. And Esau was 40 years old when he took as a wife Judith, the daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and Bashemath, the daughter of Elon the Hittite. I know it gets into greater detail.
I forgot it was mentioned there. It's,
yeah.
You know, they're listed in Genesis chapter 36, but I forgot it was mentioned.
Yeah, it gives us greater detail there. And then also, when Esau, verse 6, I just noticed it before we went on the air, when Esau saw that Isaac had blessed Jacob and sent him away to Padan Aram to take him a wife from there, and that he blessed him, he gave him a charge, saying, quote, you shall not take a wife of the daughters of Canaan, okay? While Esau was standing there, right? Okay.
Well, right.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, he screwed up, and the parage was only officiating the
mm-hmm.
act. He already lost his birthright.
Right. And
he
verse
done
8.
That when he raced next.
Yeah, verse 8. And Esau, seeing that the daughters of Canaan pleased not Isaac his father, then went Esau to Ishmael and took to the wives which he had, Mahalath, the daughter of Ishmael, Abraham's son, the sister of Nebaioth, to be his wife. So he grabbed himself an Ishmaelite woman.
But he's still not doing the right thing, because we've already seen that Ishmael's excluded.
Right. Ishmael's excluded from
the
birthright.
And he's still screwing up.
Yes. Yeah. And so, he still isn't following instructions, is he?
Absolutely not. This Nebaioth is probably, and the linguistics tells me it's true, when you look at the Hebrew word here, he is a very likely candidate for the Nabataean Arabs.
Ah, right.
The Nabataean Arabs are actually, they dwelt in Petra after the Edomites moved up in the 6th century B.C. into the ancient land of Israel.
Right, right.
And the Nabataean Arabs are known well in the historic, you know, in the Roman and Greek times.
Mm-hmm.
And they dwelt in southern Jordan, and they're probably the Jordanians of today, in part, are still Nabataean Arabs. And they're probably the only ones that have a provable descent from Ishmael, the only Arabs that can demonstrate a descent from Ishmael.
Right, yeah. And here it sounds like they're of dual descent, Canaanite and Ishmaelite.
Well, yeah, because the children of Israel, in this region, you had the children of Israel with a specific command from their God not to mix their seed.
Mm-hmm.
But all of the Baal gods and the gods of the Hittites and the gods of the Sumerians and the gods of the Arabs, they all have no distinction amongst races.
Mm-hmm.
And Islam today, it's unlawful in Sharia law to recognize a distinction between races.
Okay, interesting. So they're following Esau, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Esau and the way of Cain and the error of Korah and the gainsaying of, the whole.
Right, right. Now, immediately after this, in verse 10, is where Jacob rests his head on the stone of Scone and dreams this dream. And let me just quote verses 13 through 15, because this is where the covenants that were given to Abraham and Isaac are, again, reasserted to Israel, okay? Actually, at this point, his name is still Jacob. And behold, Yahweh stood above it and said, I am Yahweh Elohim of Abraham your father, the Elohim of Isaac. The land whereon you lie, to you will I give it, and to your seed. Is there any indication from your scholarship, Bill, that this word seed, which is translated from the Hebrew zera, has ever been used in the Old Testament, either in a singular sense, either representing a particular individual, okay, or that any of these blessings have been given to any other seed?
No, absolutely not. The word seed is a collective noun.
Right.
It does not mean one individual descendant, meaning Christ.
Right.
That is a universalist Judeo
interpretation.
Perversion.
Right.
I can't call it an interpretation because there's no grounds for an interpretation like that.
Yeah, right.
It's a perversion of Scripture.
Right.
That all these other generations would be skipped and a promise fall on one person in particular, especially when it's clear Paul all the time uses the term heirs in the plural.
Right.
That there are many heirs, that we're all heirs. Every Israelite is an heir to the covenant.
Right.
Not
absolutely.
Just Christ.
Yes.
The church wants to remove the inheritance from Israel and give it exclusively to Christ so that anybody that believes could squeeze themselves into it.
What about unbelieving Israelites?
Well, they are still
heirs, right? Potential heirs, right?
They're still heirs. You know, Yahshua Christ descended into the earth and taught and preached the gospel to the souls in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think at that point that they disbelieved him?
Yeah, right. Well, you know what? Given the density of the average Judeo-Christian, I wonder if they would recognize Jesus if he stood right in front of them. Okay, verse 14.
Well, no, because he wouldn't look like a Jew.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Okay, now, of course, now it's interesting here because the Israelites spread, to the four quarters of the earth, but that was before any Jew ever did, and we can prove that the Jews have never really been the object of this prophecy, because the true Israelites have always preceded them throughout history into these various places on the earth. And the Jews have always followed us around, and they haven't actually scattered until after we have been there already, you know. So there is a, you know, they claim that, they're the ones who have been scattered, but that's not true at all.
Right. The Jews were scattered. They were scattered after 70 A.D.
Right.
And when you understand the prophecy of Jeremiah and the broken bottle nation and the bad figs, and read Luke chapter 20 where he says that these people, meaning the Jews or the Judeans, the disbelieving Judeans, will be driven off into every nation and taken slaves in every nation. He's talking about his enemies.
That's right.
The dispersion of post Roman conquest of Jerusalem, that dispersion of the Jews was the dispersion of the enemies of God.
And the fact is that the Jews and Judeo-Christians only teach that dispersion. They don't teach the dispersions of the Old Testament. Okay.
This word earth and the way it's used in scripture, and I just scanned this page and sent it out to my mailing list.
Okay.
Just to share it. It's an inscription of Shalmaneser, the king of Assyria.
Okay. Right.
And he was the king of Assyria from 858 to 824 BC by the popular chronologies.
Okay.
And he, this inscription shows two things.
Mm-hmm.
First, it shows the serpent or great dragon as the seal of kingship and authority.
Okay.
And we know that Satan rules the world, and
right.
The ancients knew it, and they used this symbol when they when they ruled over men.
Well, isn't that also true? My impression is that most of these ancient rulers were obviously white. To what extent do you think they had a race mixed with, let's say, the Dukes of Edom or higher-ranking Canaanites or higher-ranking?
The Egyptian pharaohs that used the asp symbol had already taken Hittite wives.
Ah, okay.
The Hittites used the serpent as the symbol of authority over their empire.
Yes.
And the Assyrians, who had amalgamated the Hittites,
mm-hmm.
had also adopted it.
Okay.
And we have the seed of Cain in ancient Sumer, and it's not a new thing that it's gotten into the monarchy now.
Right.
I mean, this has been going on for 5,000 years,
6,000
years. Yeah,
and so ultimately this serpent-slash-dragon symbolism, it refers to race mixing.
Well, it refers to the power of Satan, the fallen angels, and the prophecy that Cain would rule over the seed of Abel,
right,
the seed of Seth.
Yeah, but doesn't it also symbolize, you know, as you just mentioned, the Egyptians who took the asp as a symbol, and the Hittites the Assyrians had the serpent, and this symbolism actually you can find this among the Mayans. Well, obviously the Chinese.
Well, right, but they all got it from the same place, I think.
It's Cain.
It's not a mistake that it shows up all over the world.
Right, it's the symbol of Cain.
And I would just like to read two lines of this inscription.
Okay.
I, Shalmaneser, the legitimate king, the king of the world, the king without rival.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we know that this man never ruled outside of the Near East.
Right.
But he's calling this the world.
Yeah, he's bragging.
But he says the only power within the four rims of the earth.
Right.
And to me that means that their idea of the world was the same as the Hebrew and the Greek idea of the world to mean their world.
Right.
He's not the king of the whole planet.
Right.
He's not the king of the Nigerians and the Hottentots and the Chinese and the Koreans.
That's right, obviously, yes.
And that's my point here. It's just that the way that word earth or world is used.
Yeah, and the same applies in Genesis chapter 6, the flood was, it didn't flood the whole planet, although I believe the deluge was global, but the flood spoken of in terms of Noah was very local. There's no doubt about that. And obviously when Cain was thrown off the face of the earth, which is the same word, Eretz, as in Genesis chapter 6 for Noah's flood, certainly he wasn't tossed off the planet. So, yeah, so this concept of world, earth, is really more territory. We have to understand it as the known world and, you know, not the planet. You know, In fact, I'm not even sure there's ever a reference of Eretz in the Bible where it actually means planet.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Except maybe the circle of the earth in Isaiah.
Uh-huh. Okay, that's possible. Okay. All right, very good. All right, yeah. So, you know, obviously we're talking about the known world as perceived by the inhabitants of the day. Okay, verse 15, back to Genesis 28 here. And behold, I am with you and will keep you in all places wherever you go, and will bring you again into this land, for I will not leave you until I have done that which I have spoken to you of. Okay, so these three verses, Genesis 28, 13 through 15, reiterate the promises that were made to Abraham and Isaac, and now the covenants have been instituted here with Jacob, okay, before he wrestled with the angel and his name was changed to Israel, okay? All right, where do you want to go to from here?
Well, we could go all the way to Genesis 35, 9 to 15.
Okay.
And God appeared again unto Jacob when he came out of Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said unto him, thy name is Jacob. Thy name shall not be called any more Jacob,
mm-hmm.
but Israel shall be thy name.
Mm-hmm.
And he called his name Israel. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins.
Mm-hmm.
And that shows that these promises are entirely genetic.
Yes.
And the Jews have never had kings come out of anybody's loins.
And neither have the churches.
Well, right. And right. you can't take nation and substitute it with anything here.
Right. And of course, this means literal kings. There's no way to spiritualize this prophecy. And nation and a company of nations, and certainly there are several companies of nations we can talk about of true Israel, the United States of America, 50 nations altogether,
right.
Commonwealth of Canada. Yes.
Yes. Technically, this nation is founded. This government was founded from 13 independent nations.
That's right. That's right, and there's no arguing that. That's an absolute fact. Everybody recognizes it. And Canada has provinces. Australia has provinces. Great Britain has, I don't know what they call their commonwealth, the particular divisions, like England, Scotland, Ireland, et cetera.
Well, they're actually separate sovereign nations, separate sovereign countries.
Yeah, so these are all commonwealths, which is a company of nations. What other type, you know, what other so-called groupings of people fit this description besides the Caucasian people?
None whatsoever.
And in fact, it just occurred to me recently that Germany is the same thing.
Yes, Germany is a confederation of principalities.
Yes, yes, okay. So only the Anglo-Saxon, Celtic, and Caucasian people fit this description, folks. And it certainly doesn't fit the description of anything going on in China or Africa or anywhere else, okay? And these are literal prophecies fulfilled only by the genetic zera of Jacob Israel. Okay? All right. Where do you want to go to next?
We could go all the way to Genesis 48, 8 to 22,
okay.
Because I really want to get through these promises to Jacob, because I think we've gotten the point across.
Yes.
And we should probably not skip any of them, but...
Mm-hmm.
It'd be neat to finish these
and move on
to the Cain line.
Right, then we'll go
the
on
other
to
other
Cain.
Genesis 3:15 is what we really want to get to.
Okay, all right, so you want to start with verse 1? Should I read and you comment?
Okay. Go on.
Okay, and chapter 48, verse 1, and it came to pass after these things that one told Joseph, behold, your father is sick, and he took with him two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, and one told Jacob and said, behold, your son Joseph comes to you, and Israel strengthened himself and sat upon the bed. And Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make of you a multitude of people and will give this land to your seed after you for an everlasting possession. And again, you know, the Jews have never been known as a multitude. They've always been small in number, as we'll find out. It actually says that of the Canaanites and Edomites, that they would never be a great multitude of people. And then, again, the promise of the seed for everlasting possession. Now, to me, this actually sounds like the the dominion statement in Genesis 1:27, the dominion of the Adamites, is being very specifically continued here through Jacob Israel. Isn't that true?
Well, yes. This is it's the same statement because Adam actually failed in that
right.
in that promise, in that statement of his purpose, and it's going to eventually work out the way
mm-hmm.
Yahweh wants it to work out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to happen through Jacob.
Yes. Okay. I don't know. Verse 5. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, which were born to you in the land of Egypt before I came to you and into Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. Okay. So he is replacing Joseph with the two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh. Now, quickly about Egypt. I can't remember. Is the name of Joseph's Egyptian wife given in the scriptures? I don't think it is.
I think only the name of her father. I'm not exactly
okay,
positive.
Yes, her father's name is given, yes.
And he was a priest of On.
Yes.
And the Greeks called On Heliopolis.
Yes.
Which means city of the sun.
Right.
But the Hebrews called On Beth Shemesh.
Okay.
And my insistence would be that Beth Shemesh is a double entendre.
Yes.
That the word Shemesh means the sun. It's taken to mean the sun several times in Scripture.
Okay.
And in context where it really can't mean anything else.
Yes.
However, it also means people of Shem.
Right.
And it's in other words, when Christ said, "Ye are the light of the world."
Mm-hmm.
Well, Shemesh means people of Shem, and it means the sun.
Right.
And that's mm-hmm. a fulfillment of that prophecy.
Right. And Beth
the
means
word
house.
Itself is prophetic.
Right. The Beth means house. It means the house of the people of Shem, or the house of Shem.
Right. Now yeah. there is it. I can't prove this. I wish I could, but I can't prove it yet.
Okay.
But I have indication in early writers like Diodorus Siculus and Strabo that even though Egypt is Mitzrayim
mm-hmm.
and Egypt is a Hamite nation,
yes.
that a group of Shemitic people left from Persia.
Mm-hmm.
and settled in the Delta region
right.
in the 3rd millennium B.C.
Mm-hmm.
And it may very well be that Joseph's wife was actually a Shemite
yes.
and not a Hamite.
Okay.
And
well,
those people occupied the
right.
Delta for a long time.
Well, the priesthood of An, according to Dr. Wesley Swift, is that An is simply a shortened version of the word Enoch. And he teaches that it was the priesthood of Enoch that officiated at the Temple of An at Heliopolis, okay, which would be, you know, a predecessor of, obviously, the Ham, Shem, and Japheth, okay, if that was established way back when, before, even before Noah's flood, which is a real possibility, okay?
Right, and as Wesley Swift had a lot of things to say about that
mm-hmm.
I wish I could find his sources.
Right. Yeah.
Because I only believe in reading the original source material,
mm-hmm.
and I've read a great deal of the classics, but I haven't been able to substantiate quite everything Wesley said about that yet.
Right. But in this case, whether Joseph's wife is a Shemite or a Hamite, she is still an Adamite of the proper seed lines. Okay. And so that's why Ephraim and Manasseh are considered proper seed.
Right, and
proper
they would have never, just like Jacob knew that Esau, his brother, did not get the birthright from
yes.
marrying outside of his race.
Mm-hmm.
So he sure isn't going to pass it on to grandsons.
Right.
And take them, when Joseph is replaced by his two sons
mm-hmm.
in the blessing, that is the indication that Joseph,
yeah.
because Reuben
right.
defiled his father's bed, Joseph would get the double share of the inheritance,
mm-hmm.
which would have fallen to Reuben,
right.
but Reuben kind of put himself out of grace and
right.
and wouldn't get that. In
yeah.
fact, he wouldn't get any of the inheritance that the oldest son got. He would only get a single share that the lesser son would get.
Right. Well, Reuben did the same thing that Ham did.
Right.
He committed incest, and therefore Ham himself would not be the progenitor of the chosen line, okay? But that does not prohibit the 12 sons of Israel to choose wives from that line.
Right.
Okay?
There is a statement, I believe it's in it's in the testimony, it's the apocryphal books of the 12 patriarchs.
Okay.
And it's in one of those, and I forget if it's in the one for Reuben or the one for Dan.
Okay.
Now, mind you, these are apocryphal books, and it's very dubious that they're actually canonical.
Okay.
However, it does say that Reuben had actually slept with one of the concubines that wasn't, I mean, his mother was Leah.
Okay.
And he actually slept with one of his father's other wives.
Okay.
It was supposedly Dan's mother, and I don't remember her name. I see.
Okay.
Bilhah.
Yeah.
There was Rachel, and there was Leah, and there were the two wives that were the concubines.
Right, right.
And they were Adamic Syrian, or Hebrew women also.
Yeah. And in addition, after Genesis, up to Genesis 28, where all this big brouhaha is made by Rebekah and Abraham about Esau choosing unfit wives, okay? But there's nothing here even suggested that Joseph's wife was unfit, okay? So we have to take that into consideration as well. So whether she's a Hamite, Shemite, or even Japhethite, who were the people of Padanaram? They're probably Shemites. But,
well, Padanaram, I believe, was the land of Arphaxad.
Okay.
It was north of, we can't identify a land with Arphaxad.
Okay.
Except that there are indications in the ancient inscriptions that Hebrews lived there that were not Israelites.
Okay.
All right. In northern Syria.
Yeah. Okay.
And it seems to me that that's the land of Arphaxad.
Okay. So they would have been Shemites.
Yes.
Okay.
Definitely.
All right. So, in any case, all 12 sons of Jacob Israel had to have non-Israelite wives, okay? They had to select their wives from the Hamites, from the Shemites, and from the Japhethites, basically. That's the only gene pool they could choose from, and they certainly couldn't choose from the Ishmaelites, and they certainly couldn't choose from any Canaanites.
Right. We don't. Of course, the sons of Jacob Israel could not marry Israelites.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that Jacob and Isaac had to go all the way to northern Syria,
right.
Padanaram,
yeah.
Because
for their
there
weren't any Israelites yet.
Right, and it's when you read the ancient inscriptions, you become aware that the world, the land at that time was full of Adamic people,
right,
who were not Canaanites,
right.
They weren't all Canaanites.
That's right. Yeah, in fact, the vast majority of them were Adamites. The Canaanites had seemed to have moved off toward, as we were saying earlier, Canaan land near the Mediterranean coast.
And up to Carchemish, where the Hittites were.
Right, north. But they had already positioned themselves at the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea.
Right, but there were still probably a good amount of the Kenite stock in ancient Sumer also.
Yes, yeah, definitely in Sumer, yes. Okay. All right, so very good. So verse 6, and your issue, again meaning offspring, which you father after them shall be yours and shall be called after the name of their brethren in their inheritance. Here, and we're talking about inheritance, folks. Inheritance is a physical thing. It's not a spiritual thing. Verse 7, and as for me, when I came from Padan, Rachel died by me in the land of Canaan, in the way when yet there was but a little way to come to Ephrath. And I buried her there in the way of Ephrath, the same as Bethlehem. Okay, verse 8, and Israel beheld Joseph's sons and said, who are these? And Joseph said to his father, they are my sons, whom God has given me in this place. And he said, bring them, I pray you, to me, and I will bless them. Now the eyes of Israel were dim for age, so that he could not see, and he brought them near to him, and he kissed them and embraced them. And Israel said to Joseph, I had not thought to see your face, and lo, God has showed me also your seed. not your believers.
Right. Absolutely.
All right.
When Joseph disappeared and Jacob gave him up for dead.
Yeah.
He's saying he never imagined to see him, never mind his children too.
That's right. That's right. So you can see this is very climactic for Jacob Israel here, verse 12. And Joseph brought them out from between his knees, and he bowed himself with his face to the earth. And Joseph took them both, Ephraim in his right hand toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh in his left hand toward Israel's right hand, and brought them near to him, apparently because the right hand, the blessing of the right hand should go to the elder, correct?
Right, and the right hand is always, in the most ancient times, amongst the Greeks, amongst the Romans, amongst the Hebrews, the right hand is the preferred hand.
Yes.
And you would always put the hair on your right side. Yahshua Christ sits at the right hand of God.
Mm-hmm.
That shows that he's the
right.
Number one preferred son. You
yes.
know, it's very symbolic.
Yes, yes, absolutely, absolutely. And Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it upon Ephraim's head, who was the younger, and his left hand upon Manasseh's head, guiding his hands wittingly, for Manasseh was the firstborn. In other words, he crossed his hands so that his right hand would go to the one on his left, exact opposite of Joseph's intention.
Right, and, well, he knew where Joseph should have placed the two sons.
Of course. Of course. So he did this deliberately. There's no
yeah.
doubt about that. And it says, he guided his hands wittingly. He did it deliberately, okay? Verse 15, and he blessed Joseph and said, God, before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac did walk, the God which fed me all my life along to this day, the angel which redeemed me from all evil, bless the lads and let my name be named on them and the name of my fathers Abraham and Isaac, and let them grow into a multitude in the midst of the earth. And, of course, we know that Ephraim and Manasseh are Britain and America. And I basically like to summarize it as the English-speaking Israelite world.
Now, here we have more evidence of the Jews who claim to descend from Judah
mm-hmm.
and take the name Israel and try to tell us that the Ephraimites are all dead or disappeared in the Assyrian wilderness or,
right.
or they're no longer existent.
Mm-hmm.
And time and again, what they profess and what they say actually goes against
right.
what's actually written in the book.
Yeah, right. What they profess and what's in the Bible are always two different things. Because Judaism, folks, is not the religion of Moses. It's the invention of the Jews, who are not Israelites nor Judahites, verse 17. And when Joseph saw that his father laid his right hand upon the head of Ephraim, it displeased him. And he held up his father's hand to remove it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this is the firstborn. Put your right hand upon his head. And his father refused and said, I know it, my son, I know it. He also shall become a people, and he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his seed shall become a multitude of nations. Okay, well, that sounds like the United States to me. 50 nations. Okay, verse 20. And he blessed them that day, saying, in you shall Israel bless, saying, God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And he set Ephraim before Manasseh. Okay? So I know there's a great debate within identity as to whether Britain or America is Ephraim or Manasseh. As far,
right,
it's not,
and that's vain.
Yeah.
I'm not going to try to
yeah.
buy into either side of that
yeah.
because it's just crazy.
Right.
They're
so,
at each other's throats, some people,
right,
over that.
Exactly.
And they jump up and down and scream, and,
right.
and they get all...
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's good that they're passionate about the Bible.
Right, but they should be so passionate about perhaps not going to the movies or,
yeah.
or not watching football or
right.
something that's actually going to
yeah,
hurt the Babylonian system.
Or not eating pork.
Right.
Right.
Now, there's a symbology here, and I'd like to go back for a second
okay.
to where Jacob told Joseph, you know, I didn't even expect to see you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And never mind your sons.
Right.
Or your seed.
Yes.
You know, it's time and again the Bible shows us that the race is brought back from being given up for dead.
Yes.
Abraham's 99 and he has a son. Isaac's on the grave with on the altar with a knife to his chest, and he's rescued from that. And it's time and again. And here we have Joseph in Egypt, and he's given up for lost, and he ends up getting a double portion of the inheritance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the faith that we should have is
right.
No matter how despair
right.
we are over the way things are,
mm-hmm.
that we're it's not going to end for us.
Yes. Well, and then one of the proofs that Joseph is the birthright tribe is the fact that Britain and America and all the English-speaking Israelite world, which would include South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, etc., have the most descendants. That's the birthright, is the promise of a tremendous seed, which we just quoted here. That's the birthright, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And so, because we debated this on a previous show when we were talking about Judah being the scepter tribe and Joseph being the birthright tribe. And there's a difference. The scepter tribe is the kingly tribe, and that indeed Judah was, okay? All right, so in fact...
The oldest son should have the double portion of the birthright, the scepter, and the priesthood.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all dispersed amongst three other sons. Reuben didn't get any of them.
Right, right. Yeah, he didn't, even though he was the oldest, yes. Okay.
And Judah definitely got the scepter.
Right, right. And then also it should just be mentioned briefly that Rachel was always Israel's favorite wife, and Joseph and Benjamin were the offspring of Rachel, and this is why both those sons were his favorite. And now, of course, having adopted Ephraim and Manasseh and giving them the blessing, the birthright blessing through Joseph, we see that Britain and America, in other words, the entire English-speaking world of Israel, are the birthright tribes. There's simply no doubt about this, folks. Verse 21, and Israel said to Joseph, behold, I die, but God shall be with you and bring you again to the land of your fathers. Moreover, I have given you to you one portion above your brethren, which you just mentioned, which I took out of the hand of the Amorite with my sword and with my bow. What's this referring to? Took out of the hand of the Amorite.
Well, he's saying that this. I believe that he's saying that he's acquiring this land. This is more prophetic than it is historic.
Okay.
He's saying that this land is going to be taken by conquest.
Yes.
And Joseph will get a double portion of it.
Okay. Okay, very good. And, of course, this applies to the whole planet, too, folks, because of Joshua, it was said, wherever you set your feet, you and your descendants set your feet, that land belongs to you, okay? Verse 49, chapter 49. And this chapter 49, folks, this is prophecies particular to each tribe. And therefore, none of these prophecies apply to the Jewish people at all. And they're tribe specific, which means that these prophecies must come to pass in these tribes and in no other people, folks. Verse 1. And Jacob called to his sons and said, gather yourselves together, that I may tell you that which shall befall you in the last days. Okay?
Well, now, this word in the last days, this is a problem in the King James Version and probably most other versions of the Bible.
Okay.
The word is akarith.
Okay.
I don't have the Strong's number offhand, but the Hebrew word is akarith.
Okay.
And it means the last days, but it also means the future.
Okay.
It doesn't, in other words, the scepter shall not depart from Judah through the whole future, not just at the end of days.
Okay, okay. So henceforth could be a good translation here, okay? Because most of these prophecies didn't come true until, in some cases, very late, until the actual last days. Some of these prophecies came true before the Christian era. Some
right.
of them didn't. Okay.
Strong's number 319.
Okay. All right. Now, so he's gathered all the sons before him. Just before he dies, he has these prophetic visions. Verse 2, gather yourselves together and hear, you sons of Jacob, and hearken to Israel your father, Reuben. You are my firstborn, my might, and the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity, and the excellency of power. Unstable as water, you shall not excel, because you went up to your father's bed, and then defiled you it, he went up to my couch, okay? And in my interpretation, let me get yours, you know, because in my book, The Great Impersonation, I identify these tribes with certain nations in the Christian dispensation. What do you say in terms of Reuben?
It sounds to me like Reuben is probably confined to trailer parks down south today.
Oh, that's France, isn't it?
A lot of people say that Reuben is France.
Yes.
I can't. I'm only picking on a couple of our southern friends
right.
at the forum.
Right.
Reuben shall not excel. And
yeah.
And it seems to me like the French have always beat their chests and wanted to be number one and were always
yeah.
upset about being number two.
And they had French maids and French kissing and French this and French that, which suggests sexual promiscuity, which Reuben had.
Right, and today we're all speaking English.
Yes.
And the French are very upset about that.
Yeah, right, and they hate that fact. Okay, verse 5. Simeon and Levi are brethren. Instruments of cruelty are in their habitations, which does not necessarily mean that they themselves are cruel, but instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. Verse 6. O my soul, come not you into their secret, to their assembly my honor, be not you united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they dug down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. Okay, so what's your interpretation of Simeon and Levi here?
Well, we don't find the story explicitly in the Bible.
Okay.
But I don't think it's there at all. Dinah had been... molested and violated by a prince of Shechem.
Mm-hmm.
And this happened even though he went to Dinah and had Dinah directly and not the protocol in ancient days, and until recently, by the way,
mm-hmm.
was to go through a woman's father
yes.
and seek his permission before you laid hands on his daughter.
Right.
And this prince of Shechem didn't do this. And basically that accounts as a rape, whether
yes,
Dinah wanted it or not. It's rape.
Yes, yes.
In the ancient world.
Yeah.
And Levi and Simeon avenged that.
Yes.
And destroyed the whole village.
Right.
Wiped
right.
out the village. And the story's found in the Book of Jasher or
okay.
maybe some of the other apocryphal books. It's not in detail in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacob seems to, even though that had to come from Yahweh,
yes.
Jacob always bore a grudge against Simeon and Levi for that.
Yeah, because they sort of took the law into their own hands.
Right.
And perhaps their vengeance was a little excessive.
Well, they wiped the village out.
Yeah,
and it's just
right.
the one perpetrator.
Yes, yes.
But that's actually a Persian custom also.
Uh-huh, okay.
When a citizen screwed up
right.
and slighted the state or hurt the state, the,
mm-hmm.
the Persians would go wipe out the whole village or the whole neighborhood that guy lived in. They'd
right,
round everybody
right.
up and kill them all.
Yeah. Now, it's interesting, though, that it is absolutely true that Levi was scattered among the other tribes because they became the priestly tribe. And
right. And Simeon, more or less, got lost amongst the other tribes.
Okay.
Also, especially amongst Judah.
Yes.
And southern Judah in biblical
yeah.
history,
right.
and that's evident later. But Simeon, even though Simeon was the number two son,
mm-hmm.
he was passed over for the priesthood and the scepter.
Yes.
I mean, Joseph got the birthright, the double portion, and then Simeon was passed over on two other occasions.
Mm-hmm.
He inherited nothing.
Yes. Yeah, and then in the early maps of Judea, or I should say, Israel, of the 12 tribes, Simeon is often placed actually to the south of Judah. And then later on, you see Simeon disappears and there's just Judah. And then there you have sometimes Simeon is placed in two different locations, to the south and then sometimes to the east of Judah. And so it sounds like, Simeon became incorporated into the people of Judah
yes.
at some point in history. Okay. So this prophecy was fulfilled. Okay. Now, verse 8, Judah, you are he whom your brethren shall praise. Your hand shall be in the neck of your enemies. Your father's children shall bow down before you. That's talking about all the other tribes, okay? Judah is a lion's whelp. Well, here, let's just talk about verse 8. And isn't this because he is the scepter tribe?
Absolutely. And that's exactly the way it's worked out in history. And,
yes.
And while there are people in Israel identity that refuse to recognize the Judah bears the scepter because
right.
they confuse Judah with the Jews.
Right.
But Judah, you know, and I have a paper that links the Trojans and the Romans to Zara Judah.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the white Greek, well, Hellenized nations of the East took their kings early on from the Trojans.
Mm-hmm.
And the Trojans were considered by all the other nations all the way through the Middle Ages to be noble blood.
Right. Right. And because
the kings of Europe would all claim descent, even when they didn't have it,
right.
they would claim descent from the Trojans just to legitimize
right.
their position.
Yeah.
The
yes.
Dardans and the Illyrians, actually, one example is Justinian.
Mm-hmm.
He was an Illyrian by blood from a tribe amongst the Illyrians called the Dardans.
Mm-hmm.
He was a Trojan.
Yes. Yeah, Darda and Calcal, weren't they sons of Zarajudah?
Yes, they
yes.
were sons of Mahal, a son of Zarajudah, and Calcal is the legendary founder of Pamphylia in
mm-hmm.
Greek writing, and Darda is the legendary founder of Troy.
Okay, very
and
good.
And they're both mentioned in
yeah.
2 Kings chapter 4,
yeah.
Verse 36, I believe,
right.
in comparison to Solomon in wisdom.
Right, and also later on in history, you know, going down towards 700 B.C., with the scattering of the 12 tribes into Media, the Parthians took their kings from the tribe of Pharaoh's Judah. So this prophecy that Judah would be the scepter tribe and all the other tribes would bow down before his descendants is absolutely verified throughout history.
Right. And
yes.
Roman Caesars traced their descent back to the Trojans and claimed descent from the Trojans.
Yes.
And they, I mean, all through ancient times, people
yeah.
knew that the Trojans were the royal blood.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm sorry, it's 1 Kings 4:36. And we see in the Bible, we connect the Trojans right to Judah's era.
Right. And then verse 10, the scepter shall not, oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I skipped over 9. Judah is a lion's whelp from the prey, my son, you are gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion and as an old lion. Who shall rouse him up? Okay, so he's talking, you know, the lion is a symbol of the tribe of Judah.
And Yahshua Christ is the lion of the tribe of Judah,
yes.
Revelation 5:5.
Right, okay. Verse 10, the scepter shall not depart from Judah. I don't know what the skeptics of the scepter, I don't know what problem, don't they believe the Bible?
They twist the Bible because they believe that Judah is the Jews.
Okay.
And they know that it can't possibly be that the Jews ever had a scepter.
Right.
And they hate Judah. They despise
because
all
they
things
think he's
Judah
a Jew.
Because it's associated. they
yeah.
have it all screwed up.
That's right.
And Judah, there isn't one real member of Judah that could be considered a Jew.
That's right.
And there isn't one Jew that could be considered a real member
right.
of the tribe of
it's
Judah.
Right, confusion of terms. That's what it is, a confusion of terms, and they have to keep those two terms separate.
Well, this is what half-learned people do.
Mm-hmm.
So they've gone out and they've invented an entire doctrine.
right.
right, they've invented an entire false doctrine to
yeah.
rectify their hatred for the Jews.
Right, right, and which is the hatred of Jews is justified, but they're blaming the wrong guy.
right.
They don't understand that the Jews simply assume the name Jew in order to impersonate Judah.
Absolutely.
And they cannot in any way, shape, or form be considered descendants of or even relations of Judah.
And we still don't make them kings.
That's right, and they're not kings. We're the descendants of Judah, the Zerah. The Judahites and the Pharaoh's Judahites all have been kings throughout history. It's just that simple. It's undeniable, folks. Okay, now, let me just complete this verse 10. The scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor a lawgiver from between his feet, until Shiloh come, and to him shall the gathering of the people be. Of course, this is a messianic prophecy, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And Shiloh is a Hebrew word which means peace.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly hasn't come yet.
Yes, right, right. Yeah, well, to me, it's a reference to the second coming.
Yes,
so,
it has to be a reference to the second coming, because we don't have any peace until the enemy is absolutely destroyed, and only Yahshua Christ could do that. I mean, we haven't been able to do it.
Right,
We've thrown him out of 500 places, and he just buys his way back in.
Right, right. Okay, verse 11. Binding his foal to the vine and his ass's colt to the choice vine, he washed his garments in wine and his clothes in the blood of grapes. And, of course, Jesus rode on an ass's colt, didn't he?
Right. This is absolutely a messianic prophecy.
Yes. So the second coming is actually kind of prophesied first, and the first advent is prophesied in verse 11. Okay, verse 12, his eyes shall be red with wine and his teeth white with milk. Okay, and that's the end of the prophecy of Judah. What does this verse 12 mean to you? The red with wine, eyes red with wine and teeth white with milk.
Well, it seems to mean to me anger or wrath. To show one's teeth is to gnarl your teeth at somebody and to have that reddened countenance like wine.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that maybe that should mean red like wine and not red with wine. But
right.
It seems to me to indicate wrath.
Yes.
Judah was always considered the fighting tribe. Or
tribe the excitable eat. One.
Right.
Right. Well, and of course, it could be, again, we're talking about the second coming. There will be the grapes of wrath, okay, blood of grapes, it says here, okay, and when Jesus comes a second time, it will be the judge.
Yes, and Revelation chapter 14, the angel sits upon the cloud and harvests the earth from the cloud, and the blood flows, and it's the whole grape thing, the symbology is,
mm-hmm.
is there.
Yes. Now verse 13 is very interesting. Zebulun shall dwell at the haven of the sea, and he shall be for a haven of ships, and his border shall be unto Zidon. Okay? I think this is a dual prophecy. First of all, this came true in the land of Palestine, didn't it?
It very well seems to.
Yes.
The Israelites were drawn these borders, and Zebulun, his territory, if you examine the book of Joshua, doesn't touch any sea.
Okay.
And while the territory in Israel proper allotted to Zebulun does not border Sidon,
mm-hmm.
does not border any sea, and that's in Genesis. Joshua 19:10-16.
Okay.
Isaiah 9:1 surely indicates that Zebulun did indeed fulfill this prophecy.
Okay.
And Isaiah 9:1 is about the way of the sea, and it mentions Zebulun and Naphtali,
mm-hmm.
and the way of the sea, and I believe that's talking about the Mediterranean Sea, by the way.
Okay.
And it seems that Zebulun, even though his particular territory was an inland territory, he definitely fulfilled it.
Yeah. Well, there's also a book about the tribe of Zebulun having become the nation of Holland.
Yes, I haven't read the book. I generally don't read books like that, but I am familiar with it. I don't remember the woman's name that wrote it, but it's a popular book amongst people of that descent, of Dutch descent in America and in Europe, from what I understand.
Yes.
I've actually seen it quite often mentioned on different identity message boards and things like that in reference by people in Europe.
Yes. Okay, I think it's called Strange Parallels. I think that's the title of it.
Yes, that's it, or something very close to that.
Okay, all right, verse 14, Issachar is a strong ass couching down between two burdens. Any thoughts on that?
I don't have any thoughts on that.
Okay, my understanding is that it's when the general's name just slipped my mind, when Finland was couched between Nazi Germany and Communist Russia, they defeated them both.
And there was I don't think they defeated the Germans, but they actually managed not to fall under Nazi Germany, that's for sure.
Yes.
But they did, in a protracted series of battles, they did ward off the Russians, but they also lost a lot of territory.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah.
To the Russians.
Yeah, in fact, the Finland is the only country that Russia actually lost a war against. Okay.
Right. The,
yes.
The Russians gained a lot of territory, but they wanted the whole thing.
Yes. Yeah, and they lost thousands and thousands of men. It was a total disaster for the Soviets, for Stalin.
And I have seen that quote, and it's a Finnish army general who claims that they have fulfilled the prophecy of Issachar.
Right, and he referred to his men as men of Issachar.
Yes.
Rise and fight. Okay, verse 15, and he saw that that rest was good and the land that it was pleasant, and bowed his shoulder to bear and became a servant to tributes. Well, I guess that would still fulfill Finland.
Right, but I don't know about the land being pleasant.
Uh-huh. Well, pleasant for them.
Doesn't sound like Finland at all. I'm sorry.
I prefer cold to hot. Okay, verse 16. Dan shall judge his people as one of the tribes of Israel. What does that refer to?
Well, the word Dan actually became synonymous with judge.
With judge. Okay. Okay. So the judges were in the days of the judges. Who were those? Were those primarily of the tribe of Dan?
Well, no, they were primarily of the tribe of Levi.
Right. Yeah.
So,
but maybe this is referring to further into the future, because verse 17, Dan shall be a serpent by the way, an adder in the path that bites the horse's heels so that its rider shall fall backward. And this, to me, is speaking of, let's say, a scout.
Well, this, to me, the Danans became great mariners,
mm-hmm.
and also heavily engaged in piracy.
Right. Okay.
And to me, it seems to be a premonition of that.
Right, right. And also the vision of a serpent, because Dan abode in ships, and his ships went up all the rivers of Europe, and the tribe of Dan named these European rivers after themselves, such as the Danube River, the Don River, the Dnieper River, et cetera, okay? And if you're from an overhead view, you're looking down from, let's say, a satellite in the sky, all these rivers look like snakes, don't they?
So they
serpentine their way up through the rivers of Europe, and as a scout tribe would.
Right. And there's something interesting, and that's the Spartans were, I don't think they were the tribe of Dan, but they came to the conquest. They were Dorian Greeks, and I think they were probably Manasseh.
Okay.
But they came to the conquest of the Peloponnesus, which was inhabited by the Danans who had left from Egypt and settled in Greece.
Okay.
And the Spartans, the Dorian Greeks, came 400 years later,
mm-hmm.
and took the Peloponnesus from Dan.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their symbol when the Dorian king of Sparta writes to the temple in Jerusalem his letter of kindred about 165 BC,
mm-hmm.
the symbol, the seal that the letter was sealed with was an eagle, which is the sign of the tribe of Dan later on in the tabernacle of the wilderness.
Okay.
That Dan uses the eagle symbol. Yeah. However, there was a serpent in the eagle's claws.
Okay.
And this letter is sealed with two symbols of the tribe of Dan in the Bible.
Yes.
Very the eagle and the serpent.
Right, right. Okay, excellent. And so, and then one more verse about Dan. I have waited for your salvation, O Yahweh, I guess, or maybe it's not about Dan. Maybe it's just a comment that Jacob Israel throws in here. That's what it sounds like. But, yeah, and in modern times, people have associated Dan with Denmark and Sweden, where within the northernmost and westernmost portions of Europe, where the Danites seem to have been the first to migrate to. And that would also include Ireland.
Well, Ireland, I believe, we don't have a lot of recorded history from pre-Christian Northern Europe.
Okay.
We have old poems, and they don't tell us a whole lot, and that's about it.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Ireland seems to me to be a stepping stone into Scandinavia for
mm-hmm.
Dan.
Oh, okay.
Because the Tuatha De Danann were in Ireland.
Yeah.
About the time of the Assyrian deportations of the Israelites.
Okay.
And I subscribe. It's not my original
mm-hmm.
Observation. J. Llewellyn Thomas made it before me, and probably Comparé. I'm not positive, but the tribe of Dan seems to disappear from Palestine
right
about the time of the Assyrian deportations.
Right, they left in their ships.
The Dan is not deported.
Yes.
And that is about the time that the Tuatha De Danann appear in Ireland.
Yes, exactly. Very good. Okay, verse 19, Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last. Now, I have tended to associate Gad originally with Spain, because Spain has originally known as the Iberian Peninsula, the land of the Hebrews, of course. And there's a lot of Gadite place names throughout Spain, like Guadalquivir, the River of Gad, Cadiz is originally Gadesh, meaning men of Gad, okay?
Right.
But they obviously spread to Britain as well.
Yeah, there's an inscription that L.A. Waddell has drawings of and descriptions of that was found in Britain,
mm-hmm.
that a man... probably about the 4th century B.C., if memory serves me well, and this is from the book Phoenician Origin of the Britons, Scots, and Anglo-Saxons.
Okay.
A man describes himself in this inscription as being a Phoenician and the next word is G.D.
Okay.
And Waddell misinterprets that because he's confused over the over the identifications of Israelites and Jews.
Right.
However, G.D. is Gad
in
Hebrew.
Doubt. Yes.
And there is no doubt.
Yes. Absolutely no doubt. Yes. And in fact, yeah, virtually representatives of all 12 tribes at some point visited Britain before the Assyrian captivities. And,
well, absolutely.
Yes.
I mean, the Phoenicians, the Dorians were from Manasseh.
Right.
And they were all sailing. They were all going to the... I mean, today, yeah. People in Iowa, how many men leave a place like Iowa every year? Young men leave
yeah.
and seek adventure in New York or California or,
yeah.
or Florida or wherever.
Yeah.
I mean, our people are always migrating towards the coast
right.
and the cities. And it's the lure of the cities.
Yeah,
and also the lore of adventure.
Yeah, and the lore, the ancient lore of Britain also talks about Hugh Gadarn, G-A-D-A-R-N, which I assumed was someone from the tribe of Gad. However, I found out that this title is usually attributed to Joshua. Joshua, you know, the Israelite.
I have heard all of this,
mm-hmm.
but I have not yet... I mean, my hand has always been on all of the Greek and Roman literature
right.
is a lot more accessible,
uh-huh.
and I've read a lot of the Germanic literature, but I haven't. My weak spot is prehistoric Irish
mm-hmm.
literature and the old Irish and Scottish poems.
But anybody who's interested in following up on this, all you have to do is and type into your browser Hugh Gadarn, Gadarn, and you'll get all kinds of British folklore attributing that personality, identifying him with Joshua of the Holy Scriptures, and probably I think they trace the founding of the Druidic priesthood to this visit by Joshua to the British Isles. Okay, verse 21, Naphtali is a hind let loose, he gives goodly words. Interesting.
Who now, we know that Naphtali was engaged in commerce and from certain prophecies in the sea. And Naphtali, actually in the Septuagint, is named as the inheritor of many cities of the Tyrians.
Okay.
And it's certain that Naphtali, that at least a great deal of the tribe of Naphtali, did not stay in Palestine
mm-hmm.
and did take off in ships for Europe.
Right.
Like Dan did, and like Zebulun and Asher and the rest. But I can't say that this actually indicates
mm-hmm.
anything that we can identify.
Right. Okay. Certainly so far, none of these prophecies have been fulfilled by any Jews. Okay. No chance here at all. Okay. Verse 22, Joseph is a fruitful bough, even a fruitful bough by a well, whose branches run over the wall. Of course, this means many, many offspring. This is the birthright promise. We repeat it. Verse 23, the archers have sorely grieved him and shot at him and hated him, But his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. What's all this about?
Well, I hate to say it, but that word branches actually means daughters in Hebrew.
Oh, really? Well, I mean, it still means offspring.
So,
you have to have daughters to have offspring.
If your daughters are eloping and running off to get married in Vegas.
Right. And the archers have sorely grieved him. A lot of people talk about the fact that America and to some extent Britain had a lot of, you know, where air power was discovered.
Well, right, but England, and Comperay and Swift used to love to make this distinction between the archers of Joseph and this comparison between the archers of Joseph and the longbow of England.
Okay.
And how England won so many of its medieval wars against the French especially.
Yes.
Because they had such,
yeah,
so many such excellent men with the longbow.
Right. Okay. Yeah, but his bow abode in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands. And, of course, that is true of Britain. Okay, verse 25. Even by the God of your father who shall help you, and by the Almighty who shall bless you with the blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies under, blessings of the breasts and of the womb, the blessings of your father have prevailed above the blessings of my progenitors to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph, and on the crown of the head of him that was separate from his brethren. Okay, so there's simply no doubt that the English-speaking nations of the world became the biggest colonial empires. And that includes America, even though we don't want to be. We don't consider ourselves a colonial empire. We are.
Well, that's, I mean, half of this country descended from English blood.
Right, exactly. Okay, verse 27, Benjamin shall raven as a wolf. In the morning he shall devour the prey, and at night he shall divide the spoil.
Now, a lot of people like to compare Benjamin to the Vikings, and they like to say that Iceland is Benjamin. I'd like to discuss that in brief.
Okay.
It's nice to be able to see the traits of some of these tribes in certain European countries.
Yes.
But I'm sure that we can't identify one European country wholly with any one particular tribe,
right,
or
it's
vice
generalizations.
Versa.
Yeah.
Because it's every members of every tribe. It can be shown in many instances settled in many different European countries.
Sure. Yes.
And
but
that's
yeah.
especially true of the tribes that were spent years on the coast in Tyre,
right,
and like Asher and Dan that settled in many different places.
Yeah. Now it didn't even occur to me until this very second to compare these prophecies with the heraldry. The heraldry symbols of these various tribes. In the case of Benjamin, it's very obvious because the symbol of the tribe of Benjamin is a wolf. Okay? And I think this, to me, this refers to in the morning is a reference to the coming of Christ. Okay? And it was indeed the 11 apostles from Galilee were all Benjamites. Okay? And they helped Yahshua devour the prey, although that process has not completed yet, okay? And only one of those apostles was from Judea. He was not a Judahite. He was an Edomite from Judea by the name of Judas, okay? So I think this is, you know, a kind of subtle reference to the fact that the Benjamites became the nation of Galilee. And at night he shall divide the spoil. If the night means the judgment day, then
the reward for devouring the prey. I can see that analogy. It,
mm-hmm.
It's not very obvious, but
yes.
I mean it's there.
Yeah, these analogies here. These are difficult. There's no doubt that these are difficult. What's not difficult is to say that none of these have been fulfilled by the Jewish people. Okay.
No.
Yes. Verse 28. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and this is it that their father spoke to them and blessed them. Everyone according to his blessing, he blessed them. And he charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham, blah, blah, blah. And, going back... We're recovering the ancient history of his forefathers. So I think what we can say about these prophecies is that, you know, we're supposed to look. We're supposed to look in history to see how these prophecies have worked themselves out. And it's very obvious that the Jewish people are simply not involved in the working out of any of these prophecies. And, of course, the Jews do not teach any such thing. They don't teach from Genesis 49 because they know they're not the fulfillment of any of these prophecies. There's no chance of equating their history with these prophecies. There's simply none.
Absolutely none.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, any more in Genesis here before we turn to the subject of the Canaanites? Anything like in Genesis 50?
No, I think that we should turn to the subject of the Kenites first.
Okay.
And we definitely have to go back to Genesis 15.
Okay.
And discuss the Canaanites and the Amorites, because that will lead us to the Israelite conquest of the land of Canaan.
Okay.
And we could discuss the Edomites and Esau's wives. However, we're in Egypt, and Jacob leaves us in Egypt in Genesis chapter 50. And a lot of people don't have a good understanding of what Egypt was like at this time.
Okay.
And how mighty Egypt was and how far Egypt fell, actually.
Right, right.
And who these people are. When Joseph was taken off into Egypt, he was sold. To get back and forth to Egypt was very difficult.
Okay.
And the normal trade routes were closed. And that's not discussed in the Bible.
Okay.
It just says that the people had to go to Egypt through another way.
Right.
And Clifton Emmaheiser did a very good job, I believe, in his Watchman's teaching letters 36, 37, 38, to show that the Hyksos invasion of Egypt happened sometime shortly before Joseph was taken captive.
Okay.
Was sold into that captivity. And
mm-hmm.
that was, and Clifton basically demonstrates that these people had invaded the Egyptian Delta region and seized the land, and they were Kenites.
Right, right.
They were from the land of Canaan. They were
right.
Kenites and Canaanites,
and
they were from Canaan, and there's a lot of data on that, and I think that we should discuss that now.
Right, right. Now, I just recall reading from, I think it was in Velikovsky's book, The Peoples of the Sea, where he says he thinks that the Hyksos were Amalekites, which were also Canaanites, okay?
Well, right, and they would be, readily confusable with the Canaanites, or you know, Amalek, I believe, wasn't Amalek a son of Esau?
Yes, yes. And so, you know, the connection between the Canaanites and Amalek, and if he's using the word Amalek, it's probably an anachronism, okay, to refer back to Amalek this early, which would be an anachronism. So
right.
Certainly Hittites and Canaanites would be proper terminology here, okay?
Yes, and I could see getting them confused because the Amalekites being Canaanites or descendants of the Canaanites
right.
would adopt Canaanite and Kenite
mm-hmm.
culture and traits, and it would be
yes.
easy to confuse the two.
Now, it's very common for people. I see I got a couple people here. I'm going to quickly recognize them, so hold on, Avenger in North Central Florida, for a brief spell here. Because a lot of people assume that the Hyksos, because they're referred to as the shepherd kings, are Shemites. What's your view of that?
There were two groups of people called Hyksos
okay.
that invaded Egypt.
Okay.
I believe that there were two groups, and Clifton also helped to elucidate this. There was a very early group, and the later group is confused for them, probably because they came from the same direction. And the first
yes.
group of Shemites is the group that I mentioned earlier in this program that I can't really prove it,
mm-hmm.
but I have allusions in Greek classics
yes.
that a group of Shemites had migrated from Persia and taken over a part of Egypt
yeah.
in the third millennium B.C.
Right.
And they very well may have been the pyramid builders.
Yes.
And the people
right.
who were originally called Hyksos.
Yes. Okay.
And when this second group came into Egypt, 1,000 years later, they were also remembered at by that same name, by the name Hyksos.
Yeah, and wasn't Shem the official high priest of the Adamic people?
Yes, and it seems to be that the first group is the group that the Egyptian priesthood came from.
Yes, absolutely.
And they have a lot of beliefs. Their early religion, I mean the religion of the Book of the Dead, and not the religion of the later Nubians and the animal worship and all of that.
Right.
But their early religion seems to be very Shemitic in nature.
Okay. Okay.
It seems to be very much like the religion of Mesopotamia.
Okay. So we have two potential candidates for Hyksos, and the historians, you know, not knowing the, you know, not being able to separate races and ethnicities as we are very careful in doing. Simply can't tell one from another.
Well, right, but it seems like the early Egyptians, perhaps maybe after the 7th or 8th centuries B.C., that they had remembered these two groups had actually melded into one in their memory by that time.
Yes, exactly. Okay, North Central Florida, question or comment? Okay, I wonder... And I'm going to click on Avenger. I know sometimes you just call in to listen. Avenger, question or comment? Okay, apparently not. Okay, I know a lot of people just call on their phones because they get tired of getting bumped off the chat room on the Internet. And some people, I wonder if they're listening on their, you know, on their portable radios and stuff. I'm not sure. But in any case... So we have Egypt being now already a kind of multicultural kingdom. Now, is it also true at this time, wasn't Egypt divided into two kingdoms, namely this so-called shepherd king kingdom of Hittites?
That's the point, is that Jacob or Joseph could not readily send back to Jacob his father, even when he became... in charge of Pharaoh's house because of the occupation of the Kenites in the Delta area,
right.
Having cut off the normal routes of communication.
Uh-huh. Okay. So in other words, the Hittites were at this time in power, and if they were in power in Egypt, they were in power way up in Turkey and along the Mediterranean coast in between.
Well, right. They were... You see, before this invasion of the Hyksos, which happened during the 17th dynasty, which when Joseph was sold into slavery in Egypt at the beginning of the 17th or the middle of the 17th dynasty, the Egyptians before this time had ruled over the land of Canaan.
Mm-hmm.
And they did after the fall of the Hittite Empire for a short time also. However, at this time, they had a great amount of influence in the land of Canaan, and they lost it all to the Kenites.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so it sounds like, then it would be, later on, Ramesses II, because it says in the days of Moses that this pharaoh knew not Joseph or the people of Joseph, okay?
Well, it says that they would arise... that there had arisen a pharaoh who knew not Joseph.
Yes.
And it's Ramses is late.
Okay.
And I understand that most of the popular modern chronologies date the Exodus to the period of Ramses.
Yes.
However, that's not true at all.
Okay.
And Clifton well demonstrated, and Josephus attests, that the Exodus was in the time of Thutmosis.
Okay.
However, there were four pharaohs named Thutmosis.
Okay.
The first pharaoh named Thutmosis was certainly an Adamic Mizraimite pharaoh.
Okay.
The second one took a Hittite wife.
Ah, okay.
The third one, a woman named Hatshepsut actually held the throne for as long as she could.
Okay.
And when Thutmosis III came to power, he was the spawn of the Hittite wife.
All right.
And I am convinced, and Clifton.
So there's your asp symbolism, right?
Right, and there is the Pharaoh who knew not Joseph and began to oppress the Hebrews.
Very good, very good. Okay, yeah. So you have to know this type of history, folks. you have to have a program to tell the characters from one another.
This is in, and I mean, they're available at emmaheiser.christogenia.org in Clifton's Watchman's Teaching Letters. I think it starts at 36 and it runs for about 5 or 6 teaching letters, maybe.
Yes.
And he goes through this whole the synchronization, more or less, of the Hyksos, the Israelites, and the Egyptians in Egypt. And it was probably the 7-year famine that enabled the Egyptians under Joseph to get the Delta back.
Right. Yes. Well, and then there's one more episode about Joseph that needs to be talked about, and that is the fact that Potiphar, the Egyptian woman who tried to seduce him, he refused to have sex with her. Because, why? Because, well, first of all, it's not allowed for an Israelite man to have sex with another man's wife, okay? And so Joseph was simply obeying the law, okay?
Right, it's evil.
Yes, but was Potiphar maybe one of these Hittite or half-Hittite women? Any idea there?
I don't remember whether or not Clifton wrote particularly about her, but I myself don't have an idea.
Okay, all right. But certainly Joseph, by obeying Yahweh's law, even though he was cast into prison for 2 years, he became the second highest ranking person in the kingdom because he was given the vision of the 7 lean years and the 7 fat years and the 7 lean years. And because he obeyed Yahweh's law, he was eventually blessed, okay? And all of us Israelites need to take that lesson. The same thing happened to Daniel, because Daniel refused to eat the cuisine of Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar threw him into prison because, you know, he behaved like a Hebrew and obeyed Yahweh's laws instead of the laws of Babylon. And then we have, of course, the lion's den incident, okay? And then, lo and behold, Daniel is promoted to number 3 man in Babylon. So, folks, learn this lesson well, okay? You obey Yahweh's law, and you will be blessed. You will be rewarded. You will be promoted. And every single Hebrew prophet that obeyed Yahweh's laws was ultimately blessed for it. But it seems like in every case, we're tested, okay, to make sure, you know, that we will, we'll be tried and true through the process. And, you know, and we don't know how serious Joseph's imprisonment was, you know, but it was certainly something that he had to go through before he was blessed. So,
he was imprisoned with those 2 other former members of Pharaoh's household.
Okay.
And he prophesied that one of them would get out and the other one would be executed, and it must have been pretty serious if they were being executed.
Right, right, exactly. So, yeah, and so this we have to take our circumstances as Yahweh's will for us. He has a purpose for every single one of us, and don't get down in the dumps about your circumstances. You pray to Yahweh and Yahshua, you will be blessed. That's what's called faith, folks. And you know, our tomorrow night's show, we'll be getting back into the book of Romans, because we've been talking about faith and the law quite a bit on our Saturday night show. So I just want to remind everybody about that. So, since we only have about 5 minutes left, I don't think we really have enough time to get into Esau. Let's save that for next time, Esau and the Canaanites. And we'll start with Genesis chapter 15 and start analyzing the seed line of the Canaanites and Kenites, okay? We'll save that for next time.
Right. I'd like to get into the Kenites and Egypt a little more first, too, also.
Okay.
With the identification of that, just to make it sure.
Right.
Just to see that it's a struggle between these two groups.
That's right.
the Adamic people and the Canaanite, Kenite people of Palestine.
That's right. That's right. And that's what the whole theme of the Bible is about. Even until the last verse in Revelation 22:20.
Well, it's going on to this day. The
that's
same
right.
struggle is going on to
yeah.
this day.
Yeah, right, yeah.
And they stopped.
How about a little Jew bashing to end the show? Right.
They gave up taking us militarily, and now they just infiltrate.
Yeah.
They found that's a lot easier to do anyway.
Yeah, and you simply cannot understand scriptures without understanding this two-seed line message. That you know, and here, and this is the great failing of the Judeo-Christian churches. They're failing to teach us that we have an enemy. Didn't Jesus have an enemy? Who crucified him? Who's crucifying true Israel today?
They're still persecuting Christ to this day.
If you're in one of these Baal churches, you don't know anything about it.
In fact, I had an email that explained that San Diego is harassing a Christian pastor for holding a Bible study with friends in his home.
How dare he?
And that just proved that is so contrary to the principles that this nation was founded on.
Right.
That it proves that the Jews are coming out of the closet.
That's right.
That they're in charge. We're not Christian
okay.
anymore, and now we're being persecuted.
Right. And Obama, the abomination, folks, the abomination of desolation, he's here, folks. He's here. We violated Deuteronomy 17:5, which says we shall not put someone who is not of our brethren over us. That's what we've done. We're asking for it. We're asking for a chastisement. You know, the old saying, the Father's getting ready to take us out to the woodshed. Oh, boy. It's coming, folks.
We have, the only way I could describe this presidency is Magilla Gorilla and Mr. Peebles.
Yeah, right.
And Mr. Peebles is that little queer ballet dancer who's pulling the strings,
yes.
Who's the chief of staff in the White House, and he's pulling Magilla's strings.
Yes, yes, yes.
He's really in charge. It's incredible.
Yeah. And we'll cover this later in depth after we're done with Esau, but we're talking about the seed line here, because you just mentioned the tares. Matthew chapter 13, verse 37, and he answered and said unto them, he that sows the good seed is the Son of Man. The good seed is what? The Adamic seed line, folks. Verse 38, the field is the world. The good seed are the children of the kingdom, but the tares are the children of the wicked one.
Yahweh sowed the good seed when he created Adam.
That's right. That's right. And then when did the wicked one? They're the children of the wicked one.
So we have a race here, races, actually,
right.
Plural.
Is this the spiritual seed? The spiritual children just because they're evil? No, folks. This is what's children in Greek? What's the
usually it's sons. I mean, technos is child in general, but usually it's huios, which is sons.
Right, but that also has a genealogical connotation, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It has only a genealogical connotation.
Okay. So
it has no other connotation.
Yeah, so mixed offspring among the Greeks and Romans, that was exceptionally rare, and it only happened when they started importing slaves from, you know, like from Africa and elsewhere, okay? And it was never considered right or proper, okay? Verse 39, the enemy that sowed them is the devil. Genesis 3:15, folks. The harvest is the end of the world, and the reapers are the angels. As therefore the tares are gathered and burned in the fire, so shall it be in the end of this world. Now we can see that the tares, namely the Jews, the tares rise up first, don't they? Above, their heads rise above. You know, and picture this, folks, wheat. The strands of wheat at the tips of the wheat plant, they bow. Okay? But these tares are arrogant and proud, and they rise up, even though they're shorter than we are. But, the wheat bows before Yahweh, and the tares do not. Because Lucifer, who is the father of the Jewish people, they do not honor neither Yahweh or Yahshua, the Messiah. So folks, it's so obvious who they are. It's so obvious who they are if you understand the Holy Scriptures. Okay, any final thoughts from you, Bill?
No, I'm good. I'm looking forward to next
yeah.
week.
And so I think we definitely want to, after we're done with the Edomites, Kenites, Canaanites, and Khazars, because we have to include the Khazars in discussion as well, we should probably do a thorough discussion of this parable, the parable of the wheat and the tares, okay, as maybe a concluding episode for this two seed line series, okay?
Absolutely.
Yes, very good. All right, folks, thanks for listening. Tomorrow we'll be on with Yahweh's Covenant People, and I believe Pastor Kenneth Gregg has his own show. Now he's doing it an hour before Yahweh's Covenant People. I forget the title of it. I was his guest last Saturday, but you can dial up, talkshoe.com, and Ken Gregg, and then you'll get his show. And then he'll join us probably for Yahweh's Covenant People again tomorrow night. So, and then Sunday, Voice of Christian Israel, my guest will be Jonathan Gray, and we'll be talking about Nimrod and the dispersion of languages, but also be talking about the blood on the mercy seat, because he was affiliated with Ron Wyatt. And so he's going to give us his personal opinion of the blood on the mercy seat story. So that's going to be a lot of fun on Sunday as well. Okay? All right. Thanks for listening, everybody, and Yahweh bless.
Praise Yahweh.
Praise Yahweh.